Test, test.
I don't know about you.
Test, test, test.
It's a girl thing.
Morning, everyone. Welcome to the first meeting of Senate Finance. The day is, what is the day?
22nd.
22nd of January. It's 9 o'clock. We're going to have overviews today, and Karen Rayfield has come from the administration to present a general view of the budget. Present today are Senator Fairclough, Senator Bishop, Senator Dunleavy, Senator Meyer, Senator Olson, and myself, Senator Kelly. Senator Hoffman, with actually one of the consultants that was going to present today, overflew, and I assume he's enjoying some pie in Sitka or someplace like that. So they may come in a little bit later, in which case we'll switch out with Ms. Rayfield if necessary. Anyway, welcome, everyone. It's good to be back. I'm sure you're all excited to be back and getting to work here. There's obviously some big budget issues that face us and face the state, and some larger issues maybe dealing with production that we'll be dealing with throughout the session. But today we're just going to kind of try to hear from the administration, their take on our position with the budget, and they have sent someone, and there is no one more capable than Karen Rayfield from the Office of Management Budget, if you would come up, and John Boucher as well. And Ms. Rayfield, if you wish, you could introduce your people if you'd like to, and start when you wish, and you have the comm, I guess.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, good morning. For the record, my name is Karen Rayfield. I'm the Director of the Office of Management and Budget. With me this morning is John Boucher, who is our Senior Economist. I would just like to take a moment and introduce our staff so you can know who is in charge of certain budgets and responsibilities in our office, and of course all of their information, contact information, is available on the on our website, and we are here to assist you in any way that we possibly can. So when I call the individual's name, I'd like them to stand so you know who they are. Of course, Mr. Boucher, I've already introduced. Kelly O'Sullivan is our chief budget analyst. Kelly is responsible for actually putting all of these budget materials together for you so that we actually have a draft bill on December 15. We also have Arnold Laybelt is our senior policy analyst. He is responsible for he is our legislative liaison. He works with the departments on fiscal notes. He's our deferred maintenance coordinator, works with energy and other infrastructure projects. Craig Kaklen is our management analyst. He works specifically on the performance framework that you see in all of our department budgets, federal issues and requests, community development, and health and workforce issues. We also have Diane Burnham, as internal auditor for our single internal auditor, but Ms. Burnham actually is going to work for a legislative audit here next week, so we're going to miss her, but you guys are going to welcome her into your workforce. Brooke Larson is our criminal justice analyst. She has corrections, public safety, law, and the court system. Tyson Gallagher is our capital budget coordinator. He also has the departments of transportation and revenue. Karen Elliott does the budget for the education and early development and university. Tanya Wink is our budget analyst for health and social services and the mental health trust. Lena Simmons is our operating budget coordinator and also has the Departments of Natural Resources, Military and Veterans Affairs, and is our representative on the Disaster Policy Cabinet. Kim Mosseth has the Departments of Fish and Game, Environmental Conservation, and works on our fiscal summary, works very closely with legislative finance on the numbers and classifications. And Tom Narvez is our budget analyst for administration, commerce, labor, and workforce development. We also have a couple of folks who work on our Alaska budget system, and without them we wouldn't have the documents before you today and the maintenance of our website. So they're critical to our operation. Thank you very much. And we also have a couple of administrative support staff. So it's a small staff, but we work very hard, and we are available to you. So if you have any questions, please don't hesitate to call on us. So with that, Mr. Chairman, I appreciate the opportunity to be here this morning and to give you, yes, sir, okay, and to give you a high-level overview of the governor's FY14 proposed budget. There were three bills that were introduced last week that you will be considering. SB 18, Senate Bill 18, is the capital budget. Senate Bill 19 is the operating budget, and Senate Bill 20 is the mental health operating and capital budget request. We will be providing you with the supplemental bill for the current fiscal year, FY13, on its due date, which is the 15th day of the session. So you can expect to receive that on Tuesday, January 29th. When Governor Parnell released the budget in December, he talked about weighing the priorities and constraints. He also talked about the solid position that Alaska is in, our AAA bond rating, is due in large part to our reserve accounts, the Alaska Permanent Fund, the budget discipline that this body and the administration have imposed, and the opportunity that we have to develop Alaska's resources. In bringing this budget before you, the administration spent months working with all of our state agencies and the university to review their budget requests and challenges in order to bring forward the most pressing needs while holding the line on state spending. We do that by focusing on some key priorities and principles. Governor Parnell's vision has been consistent, the economic growth and strengthening of our families being the key principles that he uses in developing the budget. We know that Alaska's future rests on responsibly developing our natural resources and creating jobs and economic development for our families. This budget, we believe, supports the governor's vision in several key areas. We're focusing our investments on resources and energy, creating an investment climate designed to grow Alaska's economy and create jobs, in public education to prepare our students for success in college or job training programs, in public safety so that we have safe homes and strong families. As you know, Alaska is a young state, and transportation and infrastructure are vital to our economic development. And of course, supporting our military missions and our families. So we all know that there has been a significant decrease in revenue to the state of Alaska from the spring forecast to the fall forecast. Declining oil production and price have a profound impact on our future and the revenues available to us. As you can see on this slide, in the spring, our forecast for the current fiscal year was about $8.44 billion. The revised fall forecast has that at just over $7.5 billion, or a reduction of approximately $928 million. For the next fiscal year, in the spring, we were looking at about $7.68 billion in revenue, and in the fall, just over $7 billion. So you can see, again, a drop of $678 million for a total loss of revenue over that two-year period of approximately $1.6 billion. This is basically the context that we were using as we developed the budget that's before you for consideration. On slide 5, what we've done is overlay now the proposed spending plan for both the current year and the next fiscal year to show what that looks like with the revised forecast. So you see, in May of last year, when the governor signed the appropriation bills for fiscal year 13, we were anticipating we would have a surplus of about $514 million. That surplus then would go into the statutory budget reserve fund. What we see now, based on the revised forecast, that in the current year we're projected to need to go into the statutory budget reserve to cover approximately $410 million in this current fiscal year. We know that those numbers are going to change as we get more experience in the year of what actual expenditures, the supplemental bill that will be coming to you next week. So we know those numbers will change. We'll have a revised forecast in the spring. But this is the context that we are talking about now and the considerations that are before you. In fiscal year 14, with the governor's proposed budget, you can see that we're proposing just under $6.5 billion, with the potential that there would be $508 million at the end of the fiscal year if the budget was approved today that would go into the statutory budget reserve. We know that with less revenue, we're going to spend less. So when we look at some of the historical growth charts and other information that we have available, I think we're in a very different place, and our funding decisions are going to be different as a result. What we are doing right now and what we worked with our departments on is to evaluate the people and the resources that they have currently and what they have available to them to carry out their mission and core services without increasing the budget in FY14. We're working on decreasing our overhead costs. We're working to be more efficient in how we do our business, and again, to focus on those priorities and those services that Alaskans expect. Slide 6, Mr. Chairman, is a visual example of what has happened in the growth of our two main savings accounts. You can see the constitutional budget reserve is in the blue bars across the chart, with the statutory budget reserve in the red bars. At the end of FY12, and actually as we're into FY13, we're looking at approximately $16 billion in savings accounts. You can see that when we've had windfall of high oil prices, we have, the legislature has taken strong steps to put money in to repay the constitutional budget reserve and to build those savings accounts. Maintaining our strong reserves is again what has led in large part to our AAA bond rating, and managing the use of these reserves in times of declining production are key to our long-range fiscal plan. These reserves will help us to provide those essential services: public education, public safety, transportation. The administration is doing several things to maximize our efficiency and to control spending. Over the past 3 years, state agencies have absorbed increased costs, such as merit increases for staff. When you get the budget from us, you'll see increases for bargaining units, but you won't see the increases for the merit increases that staff receive as a result of their longevity. Increases in central support services, contractual costs, and lease costs. Agencies have been absorbing these increases over the past several years. They've been directed to manage their budget and provide service to Alaskans without disrupting service. So they have a big order in front of them. As you may recall, in the FY13 budget, we deleted over 280 positions. And we asked the departments to make internal adjustments to minimize the impact on service delivery. We've also employed a number of strategies to help manage these costs, including improving and streamlining our business process. As you know, through our own policies and regulatory framework, sometimes we put barriers and hurdles in front of a process that we have the ability to control. So there are many, many things that our agencies can do to streamline and improve those processes. Enhancing our use of technology, the online information that's available, reducing our printing and mailing costs, Doing more of our business online is also reducing costs. Lowering our cost of purchasing, the Division of General Services has been very proactive in negotiating master contracts that help all agencies benefit from the economies of scale and being able to access goods and services on these master contracts. We're reducing our footprint and the cost of office space. The Department of Administration is just implementing new space standards that are modeled after what's happening across the country, particularly in the private sector, that will help us reduce our costs. And sharing services internally within departments and between departments. So there are a number of ways that we're trying to, again, maximize our efficiency and to control our costs. Turning specifically to the budget that's before you, the FY14 budget bills totals $12.8 billion all funds. You can see on this slide that the unrestricted general fund request of $6.49 billion is roughly 51% of the total budget. The federal funds are projected to be $2.94 billion, or 23% of our budget. And you'll see those typically, you know, a big portion of that is going to be in the Department of Transportation. You'll see it in Health and Social Services, Education, Labor. There are some key departments that both operating and capital typically secure a large portion of federal funding for their programs. The permanent fund is roughly 15% of our budget request at $1.92 billion, and this is for dividends and inflation proofing. And then designated general funds, about 7%, which is $8.66 million of the request. And this includes, for example, university receipts is roughly $337 million. That's classified as a designated general fund. Or general fund program receipts are roughly $133 million. And then other state funds, 4%, $559 million. This includes, for example, international airport funds, about $146 million, or the permanent fund receipts used for management and operation of the permanent fund corporation is about $133 million, and then statutory designated program receipts are about $70 million. So this is just a, you know, a quick snapshot of how that $12.8 billion budget breaks out.
Ms. Rayfield, can I interrupt you just for a second? I've been asked and signaled a little bit throughout around the table. We're going to save questions for the end, if you don't mind. So if you could write down your questions, and then we'll get to them. Yeah.
Thank you, Mr. Mr. Chairman, on slide 9 is a pie chart. And what the pie chart breaks out the $12.8 billion into a number of specific slices. And what I'd like to do is highlight for you on the left-hand side of the pie chart, which is in shades of red, are what are typically considered non-discretionary, and I'll talk about that a little bit. The left-hand side of the chart totals about $6.6 billion of the $12.8 billion budget, or 52%. It includes our formula programs, K-12 education, Medicaid, power cost equalization, public assistance, our statewide appropriations, which would include our debt service, our direct deposit for our retirement system unfunded liability, revenue sharing, and then the permanent fund that I spoke to with our dividends and inflation proofing. So on the right-hand side of the chart, it totals about $6.2 billion, or 48% of the total budget. And this reflects the side of the chart which is more or less considered discretionary. And this would be our budgets for our agency, the agencies, the non-formula pieces of the budget, and the capital budget. What I've done in the kind of checkered area on the right, excuse me, is broken out the portion of agency non-formula, which is general fund. It's about $2.3 billion. Roughly half of that would be in personal services costs. So, Mr. Chairman, on the agency non-formula, we have 14 state agencies, the university, the governor, the legislature, and the court system all included in that particular piece. So this is where your Alaska State Troopers, your public health nurses, your highway maintenance employees, the whole gamut of public service is included on the right-hand side of the chart. So again, this is just to give you a little context of the components of the budget and some of the areas that I know that subcommittees will be looking at very closely. I could go into some details here, but Mr. Chairman, in the interest of time, I think I'll move on to the next slide. I mentioned that our budget focuses on some specific priorities of the governor's, and included in that, of course, is public safety. The FY14 budget is year four of the governor's Choose Respect initiative, which is the domestic violence and sexual assault prevention initiative. The request before you this year is $14.8 million, and we've categorized it in three broad areas of the initiative. The first is prevention and intervention at $5.25 million. This is for public education and awareness, community-level prevention projects, rural pilot projects. On support for survivors, $2.6 million. This generally supports shelters for victims, services for children exposed to violence, and trauma services for victims. And under law enforcement, continuing our efforts to provide village public safety officers in communities that do not have access to a public safety officer. We have requested additional prosecutors for child abuse in Bethel, Fairbanks, and Juneau, and three investigators for child protection and sex trafficking. As you may know, more than 120 communities participated in Choose Respect activities this past year, and of course, we're expecting more communities to participate in March of 2013. Additionally, the governor is requesting your support for new troopers in the Rail Belt area. 15 troopers, $2.8 million. This will be for Fairbanks, Matsu, and Kenai. Additionally, a new trooper post in Hooper Bay, which would be two troopers, about $824,000. This is similar to a request that you approved for a trooper post in Selawik. We also have this model working in Amonac. It's been very effective in the region, and we would seek your support for that effort. In the areas of energy, the governor has proposed a comprehensive energy strategy. We know that affordable energy is vital to economic development in Alaska. He's requested your consideration of $95 million to continue the work on the Susitna-Wautana Hydro Project. This will continue the work on the feasibility studies, the design, the environmental work that is necessary for the application that will be submitted to the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission in the spring of 2015. Actually, I'm not certain it's spring. I know it's 2015, but we can confirm that with the Alaska Energy Authority. We're also requesting your support for capitalization of the Sustainable Energy Transmission and Supply Development Fund. As you know, the legislature approved the creation of this fund last session and capitalized it with $125 million. The governor is proposing to add an additional $125 million that will help us provide low-cost financing for energy projects. You will see a technical correction in your amended budget for this appropriation, but I think it's clear on our spending plan that that is what the governor intended to have happen. Weatherization, we're proposing to continue this very effective program. This provides cost-effective energy improvements to low-income families in their homes. The Home Energy Rebate Program at $20 million General Fund. This, of course, provides rebates to homeowners for energy efficiency improvements to their homes. We have $67 million for energy assistance, and this includes the Low-Income Heating Assistance Program at just under $27 million, and full funding of power cost equalization at $40 million. And then finally, our renewable energy grant fund projects. You may know that over the past 5 years, we've appropriated over $200 million for renewable energy projects in statewide, particularly in high-cost areas. This funding will be for round six of that project. Mr. Chairman, in the area of education and preparing Alaska students for success in college or job training, As you know, our budget does fully fund the foundation program and pupil transportation. We have approximately 129,300 students statewide in 54 school districts, including Mount Edgecombe High School. We have also included funding for the Alaska Performance Scholarship to continue that work for students who are succeeding in higher academic rigor. They're receiving scholarships to attend college in Alaska or post-secondary education. More than 4,600 students have qualified for the performance scholarships to date. Governor's goal is to increase our graduation rate to 90% by 2020. Currently, our graduation rate is just under 70%. A new initiative targeted to students who are at risk or in danger of not graduating is called Jobs for Alaska's Graduates. It's a cooperative effort between the Department of Labor, Education, United Way, and businesses. It's actually modeled after a program that's active in 33 states already that has seen great success. Approximately 93% of the students involved in these programs are graduating, compared to the 20 or so percent of kids who are in danger who don't have access to a program like this. We think it's a very effective program to target in our state. Governor is also requesting your support for a digital learning initiative to really employ 21st century technologies, distance learning, and online assessments that will provide pathways to better education for all of our kids. This is a partnership with the, there are three pieces to the Digital Learning Initiative. The biggest piece is $3.9 million, which is a partnership with the Association of Alaska School Boards. It will, over a four-year period, provide digital devices to students and teachers statewide. We're looking at approximately 32,000 students and 2,000 teachers per year, and at the end of the fourth year, we will have the digital devices in place. Also, the School Boards Association has been working with some of our districts in Alaska on a project similar to this, and they have some very good data to share with you about the results that they're seeing from this effort. Another component of the Digital Learning Initiative includes Alaska Learning Network distance delivered courses, $1.1 million. Again, this is very important to our, for all of our students across the state to be able to access quality coursework, and distance learning will help us do that. And finally, $900,000 of this request will help to provide support for our online homework help through libraries and schools around the state. And then finally, Mr. Chairman, we know that proficiency at grade level will ensure student success. We're proposing $320,000 for an initiative, a K-3 literacy project that will do pre- and post-screening of about 40,000 students, grades K through 3. This will help to identify deficits in their early literacy and then, of course, target specific interventions to those kids to help them be more proficient in reading at grade level. Under the area of transportation, as I mentioned, Alaska is a young state, and we come before you annually with, this is sort of the core of the capital budget that comes before you every year. It will include our federal highway and federal aviation projects that we, of course, match with state general funds, village safe water, municipal water and sewer projects, which leverage local funds that are available for these particular projects. In the areas of school construction, we have included the Nightmute School at $33 million. Nightmute is the next school on the list of the Kasaili settlement. We've also requested $13 million for the Quinnahock K-12 renovation addition. This is a project that you approved a couple of years ago. There's a short funding for this project. This will help complete that. Just so you have some context, you know, annually the Department of Education prepares a list of the school construction grants that are requested from all the school districts. What we have seen this year is that list totals $284 million for 24 projects. On school major maintenance, we are requesting $22.3 million that will fund 12 projects on the department's list. That list this year totals just under $254 million for 111 projects. And then, Mr. Chairman, we're also requesting your support for the fourth year of a five-year effort to address state facility deferred maintenance. This has been a very effective program. We've actually been able to plan for and complete deferred maintenance projects in a way that we've not been able to do for many, many years. We have about 2,200 facilities statewide, a significant deferred maintenance backlog. What this project has done is really bring all of our facilities managers together to look at facility condition index standards and try to get some consistency in how we categorize these projects so we can measure the success of the program. One thing that you'll see that's different in this request this year is we're allocating $2 million of that $100 million request towards a capital asset management system that would be available to departments statewide, so we have a good quality a system to manage our deferred maintenance in our facilities. So agencies, of course, can update you on their progress at your subcommittee level. Under resource development, continuing our efforts on the gas line, we have $50 million included in the budget before you, $25 million for the AGIA reimbursement, and $25 million for the Alaska Gas Line Development Project. As you know, in the governor's State of the State address, he laid out some very specific benchmarks for these projects. I suspect that there will be a considerable discussion about where we are and where we need to be headed with each of these requests before you right now. Also, we're requesting your support for $15 million to actually purchase and renovate an existing facility for the Geologic Materials Center. Many of you may have been to the current Geologic Materials Center, which is a series of vans, and it's very difficult for our potential explorers to go in and research and work with those samples. We think that's a significant barrier to our ability to develop our resources, and I think with this appropriation we'll be able to put forward a much better facility with using an existing facility. Continuing our efforts to streamline permitting, $3.3 million to the Department of Natural Resources for the Unified Permitting Project, and $4 million for the statewide digital mapping effort that has been ongoing for some time. This appropriation should help us to complete the mapping that's been going on in the Arctic region. And then $18 million, Mr. Chairman, for our Roads to Resources program. $8.5 million of that is targeted to the Ambler Mining District. And then finally, the Chinook Salmon Research Initiative, $10 million, which is the first part of a five-year comprehensive research initiative to look at the abundance and sustainability of our Chinook salmon stocks. The Department of Fish and Game has been very active in developing the research plan with a number of stakeholders. They'll be looking at information from 12 indicator river systems statewide, and so that's a very significant project and request for your consideration. On the operating budget highlights, Mr. Chairman, as I mentioned earlier, K-12 education, of course, is fully funded at the current formula requirement. In addition, we're requesting the ongoing the $25 million that was included last year, specifically targeted for energy costs for school districts. We have the retirement unfunded liability direct deposit payment that we have been making on an annual basis to pay down our unfunded liability. $633 million requested is just under $20 million of an increase over last year. The evaluation from last year had the unfunded liability at just over $11 billion. $7 billion of that at PERS. PERS is roughly funded at 61.5%. And TERS, the Teachers Retirement System, $4.1 billion of the unfunded liability. And the Teacher Retirement System is roughly funded at 53.6%. There will be an updated valuation shortly, and we do expect that estimate to go up. Out of the $633.8 million requested for the unfunded liability, $312.5 million is for the public employees' retirement system, $316.8 million is for the teachers' retirement system, and $4.5 million is for the judicial retirement system. The community revenue sharing is funded in our proposed budget at $60 million. Medicaid, which is not on the slide, but Medicaid is included at $1.66 billion, of which $686.5 million is general fund, and that's roughly an $18 million increase over the current year. So, Mr. Chairman, slide 16 is another way to look at our total budget, our $12.8 billion budget, and really to highlight why this budget is so important to Alaskans and why we spend, as an administration and working with the legislature, why we spend so much time on this budget. 60% of our total budget goes out to Alaskans through communities, individuals, and organizations through our grants, direct payments, and capital projects. This is Medicaid, its permanent fund dividends, revenue sharing, school funding, retirement unfunded liability, capital projects, and named recipient grants. 21%, which is represented in the dark blue slice, or $2.91 billion, is for purchase services such as your travel, your hotels, professional services, fuel, equipment. Some of this is internal to state agencies, but much of this is purchased from businesses around the state. And then 19% of the total budget is for state salaries and benefits. So it's just another way to think about the total budget in a big picture. So to wrap up, Mr. Chairman, and then I'm happy to take any questions, the governor's been consistent in how he's presented the budget and the principles that he's used to develop it. Fiscal restraint, to spend less and save more, make strategic investments to grow Alaska's economy. With declining oil production, we'll need to carefully manage our use of reserves and provide essential services. We need to focus on results. What are we getting for the investment that we're making? As I mentioned earlier, many people work on bringing this budget together. We start in July to bring you a budget in December. All the commissioners and their staffs, the university, ledge finance, the court system, all of us. It's a lot of work. Ledge Finance has prepared an overview of the governor's budget. They always do a very thoughtful and detailed job, and we appreciate, I think we all benefit from their perspective on the requests that come before you, and they have a lot of history. So they're an excellent resource for you and for us. We use them quite a bit as well. So I'd just like to thank you and your staff in advance for the hours you're going to spend on the budget. And, of course, we are just happy to help in any way we can. This is the starting point, and I know that your time is limited. So, Mr. Chairman, with that, I'll try to answer questions.
Thank you, Ms. Rayfield. Before we go to questions, I'd just like to spend a few moments. I was remiss in that I didn't introduce our staff when you introduced yours. So if I could just, in the back corner there, is you're known as Donnie, but I guess your name is Denise? Okay. Denise Gott, and then Tim Grusendorf, who's with Senator Hoffman's staff, who's been around this building for a long time. Denise, how do you pronounce your last name?
Lucioli.
Weston from the Meyer's office, Weston Eiler, Suzanne Armstrong, Katrina Matheny, you've been around here, and you are currently staff for Senator Stephen Stillcrick for a long time. Marta has been a page, one of the first people that I met coming into this building 2 years ago. That was a long time ago. She's Senate Finance Page. James behind me, most of you know James Armstrong. He'll be doing the operating budget, a staffer for the operating budget. Suzanne is for the capital budget. Over here are some folks that I haven't actually met yet, but Matt Greening and Emily Waste. There's Laura Pierre, probably many of you know her. Mike Smith with Senator Bishop's office. Sheila Peterson. Are you with Senator Dunleavy now? Senator Dunleavy's staff. Gary Zepp with Senator Huggins' office. I see back in the stands there Bruce Campbell, who worked down here for many years and has worked for several of the agencies. He's working on my staff. And I don't see him. Oh, Brett. I'm sorry, I didn't see you back here. Brett Huber from Senator McGuire's office. And as you all know, these people, along with the people who are working in the agencies, do a lot of really good work for the state, and we certainly appreciate it. And oh, I see back there hiding former Commissioner Karen Perdue. Oh, my goodness. Welcome. Anyway, members of the committee, if you'd like to ask questions, Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you, Karen, for that presentation. I think you and the administration have done an excellent job in with both the operating and, of course, the capital budget. We didn't talk too much about it, but just having looked at it, I appreciate your hard efforts as well. Of course, you know, it does need some minor adjustments, and that's what we'll be doing the next 90 days. But, thanks. Just, you know, and again, I don't want to get in the weeds here. That's what we have the budget subcommittees for. But just at a fairly high level, on page 2, I'm sorry, 7, I'm just going to voice a frustration and then I'll leave it. Our whole method of purchasing frustrates the heck out of me, because each one of us are going to look at various agencies as we start down the budget subcommittee process, and each agency is going to have its own purchasing people. And I've just always, and I know Senator Faircloth shares this frustration, I've always wondered why this function isn't centralized so we can get economies of scale, so we can get volume discounts. And when I find out how they're going through the purchasing process, you know, they basically are still doing it handwritten instead of electronically, so that, you know, the purchase rec can go to the central department, and the central department then can just, you know, do a electronic purchase order and then send it out to the vendor. And, you know, it just seems like we're still kind of in the dark ages in that area. And so I think there is some savings to the state there if we can look at that at an agency-wide basis. Another, as we know, education and HESS are probably, those two agencies alone probably make up two-thirds of our operating budget. You talked a little bit about education, but not too much about HESS. And I guess, if you can, I'd like to understand the Medicaid and the Medicaid expansion a little bit more, and what impact that's going to have to our budget. And if you think that we've got that area adequately covered in the budget, or if that's an area that's going to need some more attention and perhaps even more dollars. And then finally, and this is probably an unfair question, is the supplemental budget. Can you give us some insight? I mean, obviously that's going to impact the overall spending as well. And typically in the past, the supplemental budget would include those things that we couldn't expect or budget for, like fires or flooding. And I don't think the fires were too bad this year, but I think we did have some flooding. So maybe if you can just give us some insight on what we might see as far as an upcoming supplemental budget as well.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, Co-Chair Meyer, several points, and hopefully I got them down here. But actually, I agree with you on your purchasing discussion, and I think that's absolutely one of the areas that we can they are working very hard to make improvements. We can continue to do better in that arena. Centralization, particularly, you know, those of us who have been in state agencies and in government for a while have seen the ebb and flow of the centralization decentralization issue. As budgets get tighter, you know, centralization typically is an approach that most agencies and governments undertake to try to help, improve their efficiency and minimize their costs. So I think there is just a lot of room for improvement there, and I think you hit that right on the head. On health and social services, on Medicaid, at this point, the budget right now is based on our current Medicaid program and the projections that the department has for the individuals who are eligible under our current program and the projected costs of providing those services. The commissioner can give you a lot of details about some of the cost-saving measures that they have implemented that have actually made some significant difference in what we're seeing in the current program. But at this point, the budget does not include funding for any Medicaid expansion. That decision has not been made. My understanding is that there's not a specific deadline for that decision to be made, but I know that the Department of Health and Social Services is working on evaluating what that would do and what those costs would look like so they can bring those forward. But at this point, Co-Chair, that Medicaid expansion is not contemplated in the numbers that are in the December budget. And then finally, on the supplemental, we clearly, in this environment where we're looking at actually drawing out of the the statutory budget reserve to cover expenditures in the current year, we're taking a very hard look at those things that agencies, the areas of problems that agencies are bringing forward, and what ability we have to manage those without coming forward in the supplemental bill. You will see some disaster relief for the fall flood, some of the costs that were not covered. There will be some, there will be a ratification for fire suppression, which typically you'll see before you. But we're looking very hard at some of the other items that departments have requested to minimize that number. We have in the spending plan for 13 right now a $40 million placeholder, which is for supplementals, which is fairly low. But given what our experience has been over the last couple of years on the agency portion of that supplemental, we felt that that was a realistic number to target. We're really, I think all of us understand there's going to be tremendous pressure on these budgets with changes at the federal level, the state's revenue picture, and what's happening at the local level. So we're trying very hard to keep the pressure on the kinds of requests that we bring forward to you. That's the only way that we're going to spend less is by keeping those costs down.
Senator Fairclough.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. First on page 7, where we're at, could you give us an update from the purchasing perspective on the electronics? My understanding is we provided funding to revamp the procurement system electronically, and I'm wondering if you could provide us an update. On slide 4, when we talk about a $1.6 billion shortfall, I'm wondering if you could provide insight to the committee about why that is. Is it based in production and throughput, or is it based in price in the forecasts?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Fairclough, at this point, I don't have a good update for you on the purchasing electronics. I'm sorry I don't, but I can get that for you, or Commissioner Hultberg, I know, will be happy to talk with you about that. On the $1.6 billion, it's production and price. And I think I'd like to ask Mr. Boucher, who works with the Department of Revenue, to talk to you a little bit more about that, but it's really both.
For the record, Mr. Chairman, my name is John Boucher. I'm the senior economist with the Office of Management and Budget. Senator Fairclough, through the chair, it is a combination of factors in both years. Lower production is one of the larger factors, but lower price is also contributing to the lower forecast. Another thing, too, that the department has done is lowered its expectations for earnings for the cash that we have on hand. Because of the low earnings environment for cash, that has the amount of investment income that the state could expect in the short-term horizon has also been lowered, and lower expectations for corporate income taxes are also contributing to that. But in terms of if you looked at it from a perspective of how much of the pie, lower production and price are a significant portion of that pie, and the other two factors that I mentioned are lesser.
Senator Frickland.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And just to expand on that briefly then, did you take a historical perspective to rebalance those projections going forward?
In terms of?
Price, production, and earnings. When you retooled the criteria that you were using to base those forward-looking projections, did you use your historical data to bring those in line with what you're projecting forward?
I guess I'm not following your question. Are you talking for the revenue?
If the price per barrel of oil averaged $50 in the previous 5 years, and we've been estimating it at 70, did you look backwards to look before you looked forward in retooling your model?
I'm not quite following the question in terms of if
Mr. Chairman, I'll try one more time. Did we have an error rate when we were estimating production historically?
Yes, the department has retooled its forecast for both for production in terms of its forward-looking use of the forecast.
And so when we look at a range of errors in estimating the price, the production, or the earnings, when we look forward now, are we taking into account the error rate that we've experienced in the past?
Thank you for the clarification. Mr. Chairman, or Representative Faircloth through the chair, yes, the department is now risking its long-term production forecast. There'll be more details in the of how the method they're using to do that, but as they look forward, now the production forecast is being risked, a portion of the production is being risked, which influences the total production number going forward. However, in the short term, in terms of the budget years that we're talking about now, fiscal year 14 and fiscal year 13, there was not significant changes to the production level. Does that answer the question?
For the committee members as well, Commissioner Butcher and his people will come and give a presentation and give a little more detailed explanation on your question. Senator Bishop, I think you were next.
Oh, I'm good.
Okay. Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you very much for this presentation, Mr. Rainfield. I guess one of the things I have on page 14, obviously a great big issue that's out in our area has to do with the salmon issue that's out there and the shortage thereof, and now we've learned that there are a number of cases being presented for criminal cases being presented because of people that are fishing out there. And I was wondering more specifically on the Chinook salmon research, what exactly are you doing and where is this research being done and how do you plan on having it implemented to try and increase the number of fish that are available?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Olson, the Department of Fish and Game has a great deal of information that they can share with you, but just generally what I can tell you is that they're going to look, it's a comprehensive research plan. They're going to be looking at the 12 large, what they call indicator river systems across the state. They will be looking at what happens with juvenile salmon all the way through to adult and returns and escapement, what's happening when they leave the rivers and what's happening when they return to the rivers. It's a very comprehensive plan, and I know that they would be happy to talk with you in some greater detail about that.
Mr. Chairman, one more question.
Senator Olson.
And looking at the health and social services budget and on page 128 of the legislative booklet that's there that's given to us, we noticed that the Medicaid budget has a very low projected rate of 1.5%. Does that mean we're going to be seeing more money asked for in the supplemental?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Olson, what we're trying very hard to do in our 14 budget is budget what we can manage and not budget and expect a supplemental to come forward. I think what we have seen in Medicaid, as you know, there's been over the past several years, there have been a number of changes that have occurred in how we budget for Medicaid, everything from the changing federal percentage rate to some of the cost containment measures that the department has implemented. So I think the discussion is going to be talking with Health and Social Services about the projections that they developed for the various budgets over the past several years, what the actual experience has been, and what we have actually been able to see in terms of containing costs over the program. I think that Commissioner Struer is going to be very happy to talk to you about some of the very positive things that we're seeing in the current program. And it is our intention to provide you a budget that we can live with for 14. Now, if we go down a road of expansion or some other things change, then clearly that would be unanticipated in terms of what our budget is before you today. But right now, that's what the plan is.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Director Rayfield, I'm sure you've picked up on it, there is a lot of skepticism in this building about the Medicaid number, and it's because of the history of it. It's always expanded far more than what you have anticipated here. So I would just say that the reputation of your office is very good, so don't think it is that we don't believe you. It's that we'll believe it when we see it.
Mr. Chairman, I fully understand. We've had a lot of these similar conversations.
Okay. Any other questions? Senator Fairclough.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just one note. We talked about centralization and decentralization. I noticed that we are starting to decentralize the human resource function, which I wanted to applaud. In the past years when I served in the other body on finance, we heard from various departments saying how difficult it was to hire someone into the state and the time lag, so the time value of money versus the centralization of that process and having to actually wait for people to be able to show up for job interviews and process that. So I hope that decentralization will in the long term be a cost benefit for the departments, and I appreciate you hearing that from the legislature over the last 4 years. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman and Senator Fairclough, if I might, I appreciate your comments on the HR decentralization. There are still components of that that are very appropriately centralized, the payroll function, the classification, and some of those kinds of things. But being able to really provide some of that agency-specific assistance in workforce development is going to be very helpful.
Director Rayfield, on slide number... Uh, 16 here at the back, and I think maybe we have this broken out in our legislative report, I'm not sure, but could you break out that magenta colored one to show Medicaid? What portion of this is just Medicaid?
Mr. Chairman, Medicaid of that part is about $1.66 billion.
Do you have a slide that
shows? I don't have a slide that breaks up. Back on slide 9, I believe. Slide 9 actually breaks out the bigger pieces of the pie, but where you see other formula at $1.98 billion, that includes Medicaid, but it also includes public assistance, power cost equalization. There are a few other formula programs that are included in that slice of the pie.
I'll just get one from Ledge Finance.
Okay. Thank you.
Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Director Rayfield, could we go back to page or slide 11 on energy? Could you tell me what the energy assistance $67 million is again, please?
Sure. Mr. Chairman, Co-Chair Meyer, that includes our low-income heating assistance program, which is just about $27 million total.
Is that LIHEAP?
LIHEAP, and it is also the state heating assistance program. There's both the federal and the state program in there, and then that also includes power cost equalization, which is just over $40 million.
Okay, and Mr. Chair, now PCE, how does that work? Don't we have a fund set up and set up like an endowment so that it kind of pays for itself?
That's correct, Mr. Chairman. And so at this point, the let me just see if I have those numbers here. The over time, we're using the earnings off of that power cost equalization fund in the budget. So right now, the FY14 request is about $7 million of general fund, and the remaining amount comes from the PCE fund.
Okay. And Mr. Chair, is the goal then to ultimately have all the money for PCE come from this fund?
Mr. Chairman, Co-Chair Meyer, that's what we're seeing as those earnings improve.
Okay. And Mr. Chair, and then the next item, the renewable energy projects. If I recall that, I think actually we passed that bill in 2008 when I was in the House. I'm trying to remember, the goal there is to put $250 million into that fund.
Mr. Chairman, Co-Chair Meyer, yeah, I think the initial, with the first bill, the intent was to appropriate $50 million a year to get that up to a certain amount. We did not appropriate to the $50 million a year. It was, we've put forward pretty typically about $25 million in some years. It was actually increased by the legislature. Last year it was not. We kept it at $25 million. What the Alaska Energy Authority does is they've gone through their round six evaluations, and they'll be providing you a list of the projects that were evaluated and scored, and they have a list of projects through a $25 million appropriation, and I think they go on to a $50 million. So you can see what's in the pipeline, so to speak, that would be available should the funding follow with that. But we have pretty traditionally requested $25 million.
Yeah, and Mr. Chair, if I may, actually, we may want to have AEA talk to us about this program or LBNA, because it's my understanding in the past they weren't able to keep up with the money we were appropriating, and so that's why we kind of cut back from the 50 to the 25 million. And frankly, I don't know even now if they're able to keep up with the 25 million each year that we've been giving them. And I think it would be good too to see if how this money's being spent and if indeed it is meeting the goal of trying to cut down overall energy costs out in rural Alaska.
Mr. Chairman, Co-Chair Meyer, I think Alaska Energy Authority has some very good information to provide you about what they're seeing with some, the projects that have been completed and the cost savings. You know, clearly there's been a benefit to these projects, and it did take a while to get all of, you know, their ability to deliver on the various projects that were funded. So I think they're in a good place, and we'll be happy to talk with you more about that.
Great. Well, yeah, I look forward to having that conversation, because obviously the goal here is, you know, those of us who are on a rail belt, you know, hopefully a gas pipeline will take care of our needs in the future. But in rural Alaska, it's a different challenge and a different issue, and certainly the renewable energy projects and the PCE are set up to help them, and I just want to make sure that's happening. So, thank you.
Senator Bishop, and then Senator Dunleavy.
Mr. Chairman, we'll be having a comprehensive overview from AEA this Thursday morning, I believe, at 7:30 kickoff.
Oh, good.
And we can, if you want staff to attend, or I can provide your office with the slides, we'll do so.
Great. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, Commissioner Rayfield, is there a place you can direct myself to or others where we can find the bond debt and the amount of bond debt that we have as a state and the payment schedules? And
Mr. Chairman, Senator Dunleavy, there's a summary of our debt service on the website. You can see that. The Department of Revenue, Devin Mitchell is the debt manager, and he produces an annual report that should contain that information, but I'll make sure that Devin touches base with your office.
Thank you.
Any other questions? We'll take just a little at ease here.
Thank you. We're back on the record. Ms. Rayfield, Mr. Boucher, thanks for your presentation. As always, it's a good job, and I'm sure we'll have lots more conversations over the period of the next few months. Tomorrow, Ms. Tomczyk, Trinity Tomczyk from, what's that company? Federal Funds Information for States will be doing her presentation. As I said earlier, she was delayed because her flight had overfly last night. And then David Teal will be on Wednesday as well, and then Commissioner Butcher will give the revenue picture on Thursday. And so thank you all today, and we'll see you tomorrow.